You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
And it's that day and time once again when we're joined by David Sampson. He of the award-winning Nothing Personal with David Sampson. It is a daily weekday podcast recorded live at 8 a.m. in the East, Monday through Friday. It is outstanding, and it is so popular, he has now taken essentially his show on the road. How many cities did you go to?
Six cities this month. Started in Philadelphia April 2nd and ended in New York last night for the final show of this leg, and we're going to start it up again in a couple months, go to the Midwest, and then work our way west. So it's been an interesting month, to say the least.
What have you learned about you or your show doing this? Because you prepare your show one way. I don't know if you've changed the way you've prepared your show by meeting with the people, if you've learned you're doing it the right way. Like, what have you learned about the show and yourself doing this?
Well, I prepared the first show as though it would just be a regular show, and I had all my different segments, and I was ready to go. And then you realize when there's a live audience with interaction, it completely changes the entire show, and it becomes more of a stand-up routine where you mix comedy and questions from the audience and dealing with people who want to engage with you. And also I learned making shows specific to the city where you are. So in Nashville, I talked a lot about expansion in Major League Baseball. In Philly, I talked a lot about Bryce Harper and a lot about the Sixers and their process that they should never have trusted to begin with. So in each city, you really tailor it to that audience. And then I've learned how great it is to just meet fans of your show, who you've impacted, who give you time. Think about the people who give you 4 hours of their life every day. It's really inspiring to meet people who do that because you feel a connection. You feel responsible. The work, as hard as we all work, we're doing it because we want to be informative. We want to be worthy of people's time. And that's what you feel like when you're doing live shows, that you just want to be worthy of people's time and money.
Follow David on X at David, the letter P, Sampson, David P. Sampson. You know, we have found over the years, you know, because obviously we've done on location shows and what have you. There's content and then there's stories. We have found that people would much rather, yes, you have a lot of opinions on a lot of things. You're smart, the whole deal, but that they want the stories. Like, you know, when we first started bringing you on, the feedback we got, like when you told the story about including the bus in the sale of the Marlins, you know, where that literally the entire sale hinged on whether or not John Henry would pay for the bus. I mean, you know, that to me, that's where you got to go, right? You got to tell them behind the scenes stuff that they're never going to get.
That is true. People do love stories. And luckily, I've been around a long time, so I have a lot of stories that I'm willing to tell and people are interested in hearing. And one of the things you're asking me what I learned, that just because I've told a story before somewhere, that doesn't mean that everyone in the room has heard the story before. And so my thought was that I can never repeat anything that I've said. But when you do repeat a story, it's still new to somebody else. And it brought me back as an old person to when they used to run reruns during the summer on the networks. So they would show shows from, let's say, September to May, and then they'd reshow them. And NBC used to have a tagline: if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. And that's what they would say about whatever, Seinfeld, that they would show a new show of during the summer. And so that's how I feel about these shows. There's people who haven't seen it, so it's new to them.
I was thinking, because having you on, and thinking about what we were going to ask you, watching the draft, is there anything, and I mean, baseball couldn't televise a draft, no one would care, we don't know the players. But when I look at what football's done in creating all these other events, and yet all the other sports, their events seemingly go by the wayside. Is there an event that baseball's missing to try to get any type of the steam that football has from the draft, from the releasing of the damn schedule? I mean, it doesn't matter what football does. They could fart in a glass and put it on the air at 8 o'clock and a million people would watch it, for crying out loud.
Mark, you have now taken yourself inside so many meetings within Major League Baseball and the commissioner's office, so many hours during owners' meetings where we are chasing our tail trying to figure out how to be the NFL. And we pretend we're not jealous of them. We pretend that it doesn't matter what they do, but we're just lying to ourselves and to you when we say that, because we're obsessed with the NFL. Major League Baseball literally is obsessed. Why? Because, as you said, everything they do, they make it a spectacle, but they make it a spectacle that people want to watch, and they take something and they grow it. It's what baseball is trying to do with the World Baseball Classic, and it's working in certain markets where it's becoming must-see TV every couple of years. We tried with the schedule release to make it a big thing. The problem is everyone knows who we're playing, and we have so many games that if we had a 17-game schedule, the schedule release would be meaningful, was always my argument. It's 162. People just know there's a game every day. That's one. The draft. How do we make it so we draft players who are going to help a major league team right now? And the answer is it'll never happen. I think the draft should not be an MLB event. It should be a minor league event. Try to get minor league cities excited, because the top draft picks are going to play in those cities a month later or a week later, not at the big league city. But yet we try to say, hey, get to know your prospects. No one gives a rat's pituitary gland about what's going on down on the farm. People say they do, and we do in-game entertainment saying updates on the farm. Here's our top eight prospects. But I find the fans just want to see who they're watching in their particular city.
And we were talking about this yesterday with Gary Danielson. You know, he said that the NFL should really thank college football, that, you know, they hand deliver, if not stars, so many players that are well known that people are rooting for and follow. And is this where Major League Baseball, in some way, shape, or form, do they need to prop up college baseball? Do they need to help promote it? I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, Omaha is a big deal. Okay, that, you know, people put it on their bucket list of sports fandom that they want to go to Omaha and take in the College World Series.
There needs to be more betting on baseball.
Okay.
And that's a real thing, and I know it sounds like I'm being campy.
No.
When you say college football is so great for the draft, it is, because that's AAA. College football is the minor leagues for the NFL. You play college, and then either you disappear or you become a pro. And there's a lot of wagering on college football. There's a college football playoff that's a huge deal. The AAA World Series, hold on. I don't know who is in it ever. I was president of a team, and I couldn't tell you who was in the AAA World Series unless it was one of our affiliates and I was told by our development person. That's it. We would get – this is a funny story. For our September call-ups – that's when you can call up more minor leaguers than normal to help your team at the end of the year with extra pitching, extra catching, position players. I would get a list of players who we could not call up because they were involved in playoffs for our minor league team. And we didn't want to do that to our minor league team. We wanted the players to finish off their playoffs at the minor league level. And I always used to say, who cares? We need help at the big league level. It doesn't interest me at the minor league level to win a championship.
It's so funny you say that. I was in Binghamton in 92. The Mets and the Canton Akron Indians were playing for the Eastern League title. It was a best of five. Canton Akron goes up 2-1. The Indians called up a bunch of guys from AAA. The AAA then called up a bunch of guys off the AA. Literally, like, the four best players on the Canton Akron Indians got promoted in the middle of the championship series. Binghamton wins the last two games, wins the Eastern League title.
That story should sum it up for you. And when you don't have that, how do you build the excitement of the CFP when you're – can you imagine half the team leaves, like, at halftime of the Rose Bowl? They just say, all right, that's it. We're now being called up to our big league team. It's just such a different world, different sport. We try. Did you know there were games in Mexico City this weekend?
Yes. But remember, we're goobers. We really pay attention. Do 99.7% of America have any idea the Rockies and Astros play two games in Mexico City? No idea at all. Nor do we think 99.6% of them care.
So that's an issue. When the NFL went to London once in a while, with Jacksonville as an example, it was an event. But now there's so many games in Europe, NFL games specifically, that you're not sure if there's a 9:30 a.m. game, but you're willing to look on a random Sunday morning if you're awake on the thought there's an international game, and it's so big for fantasy and for gambling. but a regular season game in baseball, one of 162 that's being played in Mexico City. There's a series in London coming up in June. It's hard to get the excitement for these international events the way it used to be, a little easier. And the NFL is even finding it quite a bit harder.
What's the end game for MLB in trying to play these games in London and Mexico? They're not, I mean, will they expand to Mexico City? Is that in the cards, or is this just a money grab?
They'll pretend that Mexico City is an expansion candidate when it comes to expansion, but it won't happen. And the reason why they'll pretend is that it will create competition with these cities that will eventually get expansion. But no, Mexico City won't get a team anytime in my lifetime. The reason why these leagues go international is A, they want to have a footprint where they can get local broadcast deals in these countries. International broadcast revenue is a real thing. You make money on that. C, B, maybe, you want to get all of the promoter money. It's promoters who pay to do these games. So when the NFL goes to Tottenham, they're getting paid to put a game on by a promoter in London. In Mexico City, there's a promoter that pays to get the Astros and the Rockies. And that is profitable. That's MLB International making money. Ideally, you want to get a superstar who is Mexican. The way Yao Ming changed basketball in China forever, you'd love to find a professional baseball player in China, in India, and it helps the market the way Japan is a huge baseball market because of the likes of Ichiro and Shohei.
Less than a minute left. How much money does a team make on an average baseball game? Because when we talk about maybe going from 162 to 154, you got to make up the lost revenue. An average game, not the 6,000 at the Marlins game last night, 20,000 a Tuesday night in Chicago. How much do the White Sox make on that game?
Let's assume that it is $100 is the per cap, which means that is what everybody spends on a ticket, food, beverage, parking, a baseball hat. So just assume that, and then assume a margin of 20% because their expenses, not all of which I'm allocating here, because I can make up the numbers, David, anyway, and show you that I could allocate salaries over 162 games, allocate them to the game day revenue, and all of a sudden your profitability goes right down into the toilet. So every team has a different amount, but I would tell you that there are not many teams that were not willing to go to 154. Double negative. So listen to what I said. Most teams were willing to go to 154 because they still are going to be fine losing four home games and four road games, but about four or five teams would really not be fine.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for being with us. Miller and Moulton, MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. And go to Miller_Moulton on X and you'll find our poll question. Heck, Mark had it up there 45 minutes ago. Of course, I didn't get around to retweeting it until about 2 minutes ago, but, you know, somebody's paying attention. What's our question?
With Jason Kelce signing with Monday Night Football, which pregame show do you like the best? CBS's NFL Today, Fox NFL Sunday, NFL Countdown on ESPN, or I don't watch pregame, which is winning?
Kind of thought it would.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me in this day and age.
Is there something they could do that would get you to watch? And by the way, they would love for you to watch. You're 24. You know, the other two guys are 58 and 54. They would love for you to watch. Seriously, it's the only demographic that the NFL's worried about. They're not as good with younger people, not even close. And obviously, in theory, you want them to grow up to become NFL fans. So if they're not latching on to you now, you know, what are the odds that they will latch on to you in your 30s and 40s? You're taking a risk.
I would think fantasy and gambling would be the keys to getting younger people to watch.
That, and I do think the progress they're making by bringing in RG3, I know they just replaced him with Jason Kelce, but players that we watched growing up, you know, because when I get on, I love Howie, I love Terry, but I'm a, like you said, David, like I'm a sports goober, so I like those guys. The average 24-year-old does not know anything about Jimmy Johnson. You know what I mean? I mean, they know he's the Cowboys coach or whatever, but they don't.
No,
they're not interested with what Jimmy Johnson has to say. They would be interested to hear what Jason Kelce has to say.
Would they be interested if Belichick was on?
I would be. I don't think most 24-year-olds would, to be honest, because he's just monotone. And that's what we know him as, right? Because that's how he sounded at the podium for 2 decades.
He, by the way, is showing up. Tom Brady is being roasted Sunday. Live on Netflix. That's the other thing. Netflix doesn't do live. Apparently, this roast is going to be live Sunday on Netflix. Belichick is one of the roasters. How much money would you donate for Belichick to tell an off-color joke at Brady's expense? Honestly, I'd throw hundreds into the pot for a drop-dead, funny, off-color joke at Brady's expense. You know, the type of, it doesn't have to be the A-list joke at a roast.
But no, but he just went, he's gone through a divorce recently. There's totally material there that you can get to.
Totally. Something involving Giselle, something involving footballs and deflate, you know, come on now. I mean, that's worth the price of admission to me.
Sounds like you're ready to watch the Tom Brady roast.
Totally. What am I going to be watching? I'm guessing it's Sunday night, right? It's Sunday, so I'm guessing it's in the evening. Oh, yes. Yes. I know it could be like game 7 of Mavs Clippers or, you know, Magic Cavs. No, I get it. No, I'm in. First off, I think Peyton and the popularity of the Mannings making fun of themselves. Okay. The fact that Brady's even agreed to do this, you know, he's Tom Brady. You know, it's like a pedestal. You know, the greatest football player of all time.
Right.
Many people hold him in that regard. He's just starting his second career of broadcasting. He's getting roasted before he does his first broadcast.
Michael Jordan would never do something like this, you know, just for example.
Well, especially right after he retired.
Right.
Imagine, do you think LeBron, 2 years from now, he's done? All right.
No.
And LeBron would say, yeah, sure.
LeBron, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
What are you telling me next? Kevin Durant's going to let them roast him?
They are a little thin-skinned.
You think? Could you imagine any NBA player being roasted without their burner phone sitting next to him, for crying out loud?
Well, I could from a different era. Like, I think, you know, Chuck would take part in a roast. Shaq would definitely take part in a roast.
Current NBA player.
Right. Oh, hell no. Hell no. Although, you know who I think would? Anthony Edwards. I really do. I'm falling in love with that guy. I really am. He is an awesome player, and he's got, I don't know, he's got a bit of an old school mentality. He just tells it like it is. About himself, about his... I mean, Carl Anthony Towns is an all-star player. He looks right at him and says, stop fouling, man.
Some of that mic'd up was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They can't beat us unless we foul them. So quit fouling, man.
Right. And Carl Anthony Towns, instead of saying, shut up, worry about yourself, Carl Anthony goes, you're right.
And he's the vet. And right. Edwards is the new young guy.
Right, is the newbie.
So Sunday night, 8 p.m. on Netflix, the greatest roast of all time. The Groat, as they're calling it.
I'm in. I got to be honest. I'm in. At which point, Belichick then, after telling 4 tremendous jokes at Brady's expense, says, and I'd like to announce the debut of my new podcast, We're On to Cincinnati. Good night, everybody. And he walks off. He is threatening to do a podcast. You have to name it that, right? I mean, come on. You got to look at Bill and go, listen, you're going to be back in coaching next year. It's a one-year thing. Okay. Let's say we call it We're On to Cincinnati. Come on. Poke fun at yourself.
Okay. Either that or next question.
Right. Think about the shows you're going on. McAfee and Manning. What do? They make fun of themselves. If you're going to do this, got to make fun of yourself. Got to be more likable, Bill. Apparently nobody hires you because they think you're a blankety blank.
I'll watch more Manning cast with Belichick on it than I was before. I already liked the Manning cast. I think we've got the perspective of the regular broadcast taken care of.
Right.
Since you're there.
I know. It doesn't help our viewership on this show because you two are like, well, hell, Moulton's in the booth. He'll tell us if anything has went on. Let's watch the Manning cast.
It's one of the first things I thought of when I realized what you do. It's like, oh, great. Now I can just kind of relax on Monday nights.
Right. He didn't think, wow, maybe I need to watch out of respect to him. He thought, well, hell, since he's there, I can watch the other one.
That's exactly the way I've taken it, Trent.
My first Monday Night Football viewing experience as the producer of the show was when you were wearing the Sad Lizard costume.
Thanks, Joe Buck.
So that was great because I was watching it with my family. Lizard. I'm like, that's him right there.
Proud dinosaur.
Proud lizard. Proud dinosaur, sad lizard, whatever it may have been, it won't top today's play of the day. What do you have for us, Trent?
Another series comes to a close with a rather exciting finish. Jamal Murray, for the second time in this series, sends the Lakers home losers, and this time it was for good.
Denver looking for a game winner. Murray has it on the high right side. High pick from Jokic. Murray, jumper from eight. Got it again! 3.6 seconds left for the Lakers. LeBron over to Prince. Jumper's no good at the horn. And the LA Lakers can take that L on the way out, along with that whistle.
Jason Kosmicki on the call for 92.5 FM, The Altitude in Denver. Jamal Murray wins it. Leads all scorers, 32 points. And Lakers taking that L on the way out.
Gotta love the hometown announcer, don't you?
Yes.
Damn right you do.
Take that L with you and that whistle. Nuggets not happy with the officiating. Thinking the Lakers getting the calls. Lakers do get the calls.
Yes, they do. Make the call to Molly Maid, 239-774-5839. See what I did there, David? 239-774-5839. Call Molly Maid. Tell them Miller and Moulton sent you. You're looking for the cleanest house and the best service for the best prices. Molly Maid is the way to go. Make sure you tell them Miller and Moulton sent you. Pat Kerwin in 30 minutes right here.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes till the top of the hour. Pat Kerwin of NFL Radio and CBS's NFL Today Show will join us coming up at the top of the hour. We'll talk a little Orlando Magic, who have won two home playoff games to even their series with the Cavs. Not many series are 2-2 between hockey and basketball. What, two hoop, one hockey? Series 2-2, everything else has been 3-1 or a sweep. Got the Clippers and the Mavs, the Magic and the Cavs and hoop, and just the Stars and the Golden Knights with the home team 0-4 in that series in hockey. But Pat Kerwin will join us at the top of the hour. And as we mentioned, he's part of CBS's NFL Today Show, which had a shakeup yesterday. Boomer Esiason and Phil Simms out. Matt Ryan in. Bigger role for J.J. Watt. And the pregame shows are the focus of our poll question. Which one do you watch? Or do you watch at all? And nearly half of you that are responding at that Mark Miller, at the David Moulton, at Miller underscore Moulton on X, right around half of you are like, yeah, I don't watch the pregame shows.
Texters who don't watch, chiming in with the only pregame I watch is the fantasy football show. That's what I watch.
Do you set your lineup that late? Or do you watch it because you're curious about the choices that you made and you want the fantasy people to let you know you made the right choice or you're going to be in for a rough day?
I don't ever set my lineup. Sometimes it will help my last pick in a lineup, but more than anything, David, I think they give you the most football. I think the fantasy lineups start locking in on, hey, this matchup in game X is a big – there's an advantage for the slot in the game between Dallas and Minnesota today, and here's why. Dallas has been terrible against slot receivers. So to me, they're talking about football. The pregame shows are giving you stories. The pregame shows are for the casual fan that's giving you a background story on some player and his kids or his wife or his family. And quite frankly, I don't care.
because the lineup, if you will, has to be set by an NFL team 90 minutes before kickoff. That's when you have to declare who's active, who's inactive. So if you're waiting to see if someone who's day-to-day is going to go or not, you find out 90 minutes before kickoff. That, to me, is also the value of, say, the ESPN fantasy show, Mark, because if you're playing guys in the 1 o'clock game, that show, I think, is 11-1. Well, they start going through actives, inactives at around 11:30.
100%, David. You are right on.
And your point, Mark, I mean, remember, we have Dr. Roto. For those that don't know, Dr. Roto is our regular fantasy guy during the football season. And we both became a fan of Dr. Roto because he lives in Southwest Florida, and we both lived there for the longest time. Mark still does. And he used to do a fantasy show on the weekends. And when I didn't do NFL, I was just doing college, I would land Sunday morning, and on my drive home, I was always listening to his show. And that's what appealed to me about Dr. Roto. Even though I don't play fantasy, is, wow, he talks more football than I get all week. Because that's all he's talking about is matchups. And, you know, I mean, we love that on this show. We're goobers. I mean, we're trying to be entertaining, but deep down, we're goobers at heart.
And matchups has become, I mean, that's, if anything that you've learned, and I know you've learned a lot working with Gary Danielson, but hasn't that matchup, as he tried to say, the pressure point of a defense is the one thing he's really imposed on you in the nearly 20 years that you've worked together.
It was very early on that I was around Gary, and he said to me, you have no idea the damage a good tight end could do to a defense. And we get to the booth a good 3 hours before kickoff on Saturdays. And there was one particular Saturday where, I mean, he always has 98% of his prep done. But Gary likes to work most of those 3 hours before the game. He's like a golfer who likes to fiddle with the, you know, the putter and then, you know, what have you. So Gary doesn't spend a lot of time just sitting around shooting the bull. And for whatever reason, we had a little bit of time that Saturday. And he literally took 10 minutes to show me the damage that you can do by formations with a tight end to a defense. And it was like, you know, I was taking a master class. It was like, wow. And he said, you know, we used to do this with Detroit. We used to do this with Cleveland. You know, imagine this guy was David Hill. Imagine this guy's Ozzie Newsome. You know, I mean, I have goosebumps right now just reciting it. And so that's why. And it's funny. We, like, the Raiders took Brock Bowers, and people are freaking out. Oh, well, they do, because they've got a good tight end, right? The Notre Dame kid they took last year. And there are a few people that I know that are like, yeah, they should run two tight end all the time. Do you know what that does to a defense? Hey, we could talk about the Patriots. You know, we're talking about Belichick and Brady a moment ago. Now, obviously, the best offense they had was the 07 one with, you know, Randy Moss at his height. I mean, that team was damn near unstoppable. I don't know if anyone still has scored as many points as that Patriots team did. You know, Wes Welker on the other side, Brady, you know, a very good offensive line. You know, we all know what they did. But I could argue the second best offense that the Patriots had, and they couldn't keep them healthy at the same time for long. But when they had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, that was a problem.
It was unstoppable, David.
It wasn't
a problem. It was unstoppable.
Right. And Gronk got hurt the 1 year. Okay, and it was why the Giants were able to beat him in the Super Bowl that year. Hernandez was hurt 1 year, and then we all know what happened to Aaron Hernandez. But when they had the two of them together, what are you going to do? I mean, imagine two Kelseys. I mean, look what the Chiefs do with one. Imagine you had two. I mean, Kyle Hamilton's the best covering safety in the game. He is. Kyle Hamilton's amazing. Kelce caught 11 balls against Kyle Hamilton. Now, it helps that he's got the best quarterback in the game throwing to him. Some of the catches were ridiculous. But, I mean, imagine you got two of those. How many wideouts do you need? So,
yeah. Not to mention what you can do running the football when you have two tight ends.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had no problem with
the line of scrimmages.
I had no problem with the Raiders doing what they're doing. You bring in a dynamic offensive weapon that plays tight end. Oh, okay, you already have one. All right, we're running 12. We're running 12 personnel a lot.
And I could argue, since they have two mediocre or maybe below, depending on your thoughts on Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell, that having two tight ends, and oh, by the way, Devontae, who you still have to double team. I mean, don't you agree? How many teams can cover Devontae Adams one-on-one? Five? That they think they got a corner that can cover him? So in theory, you put two tight ends on the field, safety's got to be involved in covering them, right? Well, one of your safeties got to cheat over to that guy, Adams. Well, now what are you going to do with the tight ends?
And now when you take one of those tight ends and move him out to the slot, out of formation, who's going with him? Because you're already doubling Adams. So there, what you can create offensively to me is, and as you mentioned Gardner Minshew, well, that just made him better is what it did.
Speaking of wide receivers, I mentioned Devontae Adams. Apparently, you know, the rumor mill last night, I don't know if you saw it on X before you went to bed, but the word is sometime today the Steelers are acquiring a veteran wide receiver. And obviously the two that you think of is they're going to take one of the two Niners receivers off their hands, Debo or Brandon Ayuk. One guy who also got mentioned was the Raiders wide receiver. Now, you got to admit, this is very un-Steeler-like. This would be awesome. They're tired of being, what did Mr. Rooney say publicly? I'm tired of being a fringe playoff team. We're better than that, or we need to be. And Tomlin entering the final year of a contract, although I think he renegotiated, the GM who's like, oh, I guess Mr. Rooney's a little aggravated here. I guess I got to get to work.
And he has gone to work.
Blew out the whole quarterback room. Brought in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields.
Drafted linemen that people think are going to make an immediate impact on what was a bad offensive line.
And now he's talking about giving up future draft capital to go get a proven wide receiver? Hey, man, how about that division? I know you can go a little crazy, make too many deals and what have you. That's the toughest division in football. I find it laughable, the people in and around draft weekend that were debating the toughest division in the league. Are you serious? All four teams finished with a winning record last year. Three of them made the playoffs in the tougher conference.
I think it's harder to pick who's going to finish last in that division than it is who's going to finish first.
Like, totally.
I'll still put my money on Baltimore to win that division. Joe Burrow hasn't been healthy enough long enough for me to say he can do it over and over again. But who's going to finish last?
And Cincinnati won 9 games and Burrow missed half the year. If all four quarterbacks stay healthy, confidently pick who's going to finish fourth.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, but that would be exciting. I'd love for him to wait one more day. Give me a May trade. It'd be symbolic. That's what I would. It's just wait one more day. Give me a May trade.
What the hell is the difference between today and tomorrow?
The day in which you can start firing MLB managers, apparently.
That's right, Mark. Can't do anything on April 30th. May 1st is when you can just right into action.
Okay. I guess.
And Irish brought it up in our Twitch chat room, and it's something that we haven't talked much about. And quite frankly, the draft is so big, it didn't get talked much about. But Goodell, who many feel is in the final contract, many feel that Goodell signed this extension. It pretty much takes him through the decade, and then Raj is going to be done. I mean, Mark, when you're making $67 million a year, I mean, between now and the end of the contract's $300 to $400 million. I mean, do you need one more?
do you need this one?
Well, you know, the prices are going up. You know,
yes, they are.
Third and fourth generation, you know, what have you. But Goodell, and right before the draft, he, you know, answered some questions. And they're like, look into the future. What do you see? He goes, well, I see 18 games, number one. Number two, I see the Super Bowl President's Day weekend. It's a three-day weekend. We'll play on Sunday. And three, I don't see an international franchise, certainly not while I'm part of the league, but I do see us playing about 16 games outside the country. And we're playing like what, about six right now? And didn't Pat Kerwin on our show a few years ago say, I could see basically a 9:30 a.m. game every week? Because what does that do?
Opens up another TV slot,
new TV
and TV
package.
Revenue for the league.
There you go. And Goodell's made no bones about it. He said this 2-3 years ago. We want to be a $25 billion annual league. 25. They're up to 20.
And the way Goodell is pushing the 18th game is very easy for the football fan to absorb. He's like, who wants three preseason games? Doesn't 18-2 sound a lot better than 17-3? And what fan out there goes, no, that sounds terrible.
But also notice what he's talking. He's not talking about moving the season earlier. Oh, no. They're not playing before Labor Day. That ain't happening. No. They're going to push it back. That's what they're going to do. Okay. All right. So, how many things has Roger said, this is what I want, or this is what we see happening, that hasn't happened in the next 3 years? Exactly. Right. Well said, Mark.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. You nailed that.
There you go. So, 18 games, it's happening.
Now, remember, you got to open up the CBA. This is where, once again, if you're the players, start making your list, man. They can't go meet at West Palm Beach and come out and say we're playing 18 games. This has to be negotiated through the union.
Second bye week?
You want all guaranteed contracts? You know, what is it you want? Because that's worth a few billion to the league. Now, sure, it's worth more to your players. And by the way, if they go 18 games, think about the cap. The cap already now is it just clicked in last year. It's going to go up 25 to 40 million a year. Huh. Add an 18th game. Add 5, 6, 8, 10 million to every team's cap going forward. Pat Kerwin, more NFL next.